Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Ageless wisdom, lifetime lessons from, of all places, the Bible. I'm going to be anxious to talk about this one, and you should be anxious to hear it, whatever your age. Our guest today is Christopher M. Bellido, who is a professor of history at Kane University in Union, New Jersey. He has published several books with Paulus Press, where, in fact, he's been an editor. Have you not?
I have.
Yes, and is now an editor with Brill.
As well,
you
yes.
You move around. His books not only include Ageless Wisdom, which we're going to talk about today, his newest, but 101 Questions and Answers on Popes and the Papacy, and the companion volumes, Renewing Christianity and General Councils. He is frequently called upon to interpret the Roman Catholic Church, contemporary church, the papacy, its ceremonial, its recent developments on television, and now on podcast. Welcome. And tell us about this newest book, which is a little bit, is it off the beaten track of your,
it is, it
your
is.
Lifetime?
This is what happens when you get tenure and promotion. You can start writing things that you want to write.
But it's not because you're aging. This I want to listen to because I am. Why Ageless Wisdom at this time in your life?
Well, it may have something to do with the fact that I got on the wrong side of 40 and then 50. That could have been it.
Oh, really?
But also I was looking for an excuse, or rather an opportunity, to read the Bible. So I'm Catholic. We don't read the Bible, right? We just read it in excerpts. And I had never read the Bible from word one to word end. And so I was looking for an opportunity to do that. I very much wanted to move into a scripture topic. And then I was always, you know, listening to these Bible stories about age and wisdom. And of course, we have this reflexive notion that as you get older, you get wiser. And I'm noticing that as I'm getting older, but I'm not getting wiser. And then sometimes there are stories in the Bible where you have young people, such as Daniel, who's noted for being a youth, and people say he speaks with the wisdom of the elderly. Mm-hmm. So does that mean that in the Bible, age equates with wisdom? And of course, you don't have to be a believer to read the Bible. The Bible is a shared cultural text. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to look not only at Jewish and Christian scriptures, but then I wanted to look at some of those stories as they went through time. So I read Jewish, Christian, and Muslim commentaries on some of the most famous stories. Abraham, of course, the shared patriarch among the three monotheistic faiths. And I wanted to see how people interpreted this question. And of course, the Bible is an anthology. It's a variety of genres written in different places at different times. So, you know, whenever anyone says the Bible says, I fall down on the floor and start frothing. But nevertheless, I was able to come up with some, I think, handy tools. And the other, the kind of broader context for ministry, are the statistics of the demographic shifts about age. So These numbers are just astonishing. Every day from now until 2030, 10,000 Americans will turn 65. Every day, 10,000 Americans will turn 65 from today until 2030. 20% of America's population is going to be over 65 within 20 years. Mm-hmm. Within 5 years of today, there will be more people on the planet who are over the age of 65 than under the age of 5. And that has never happened before in recorded human history. And the implications for ministry are staggering.
Not to mention health care and
all of those issues.
Financing and taxation and all the rest.
All of those things.
But now we're talking today specifically about ministry.
Yeah, well, you know, Pope Francis has really started to talk about this a lot. Not that John Paul II didn't or Benedict didn't, but I began to kind of, because I was writing the book, I began to pay attention. And he specifically talks about the elderly as the connective tissue. You know, he wants the generations to come together. He talks about the young people. It's good for young people to hear the history of their family, the history of their culture. But he turns it upside down. At one point when he preaches on Simeon and Anna, the Feast of the Presentation, which is in February, he says the young people So the young parents, Mary and Joseph, they're the observers. And the old people, Simeon and Anna, are the prophets. Now, completely flipped around, right? Yeah, we normally think of the prophets as young people looking forward. We normally think of the elderly as looking back, right, as being the keepers of the past. And the Pope is saying, no, that actually the elderly, old age is not only a time to reap, it's a time to continue to sow. So it's a completely different way of looking at our elder brothers and sisters as resources. And of course, this fits in with his other concerns about the globalization of indifference and that we're not caring for Christ among us.
You've been writing popular books for a long time, and that is not does not cast aspersions because you've also written scholarly books. But this book is obviously in a popular vein in the best sense. It's not a systematic theology. It is not a true a church history. It is not abstract biblical commentary. It is, but it is based on the stories of the Bible, taken from the Bible. Is there a kind of typology? Did you gather the stories around certain kind of themes?
They emerge.
They
emerge. So I hope the book is full of lots of learning, but I didn't want to wear my footnotes on my sleeve.
Okay.
And so I deliberately wrote a book that I thought people could read one chapter on a commute, let's say. And so I gathered the chapters around the lessons that emerged from the material. And I think one of the things we learn is that old age does not necessarily equal wisdom.
Okay.
So, for instance, we have examples of wise young people and old fools. In fact, if you said, who is the wisest person in the Bible, you would answer King Solomon, mm-hmm. Solomon the Wise, right? Mm-hmm. He ends his life as a fool. And so that's not part of the story that we normally know. And it's kind of fun, right, to learn those kinds of things. But the kind of next book that I'm going to do that I grew out of this one is that being wise means being humble. And in fact, Pope Francis has said that to be wise, you need to see through the eyes of God, and that's a way. Well, when you think about that, seeing through the eyes of God is seeing through the eyes of Jesus. And is there a more is there a better example of humility than the God who becomes human, who stoops down? It's one of the images that Pope Francis likes to use, is that we stoop down. The image of Mother Teresa stooping over and reaching down. So one of the lessons was being wise means being humble. And another one is the notion that as you I had a rabbi friend read the book, and he said, I think that as you get older, you get more chutzpah. Because you realize that a lot of life is not black and white, it's mostly gray, and that there is the need for compromise. And so one of the examples is Abraham bargaining with God to save Lot's life, you know? Well, so what if I find 100 people? Well, if I find 100 good people in Sodom and Gomorrah, God says I won't destroy it. And Abraham says, well, there's no way I'm going to find 100. How about 50?
Right.
You know, and then at one point he even says, don't get mad at me, God, really, but how about 10?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there's this sense that you can kind of bargain with God, and you can get mad at God. One of the things I found is that the older characters are not afraid to get mad at God. And so Moses, at one point, gets really, really mad at God when he brings the Hebrews out of Egypt, and then all of a sudden the food and the water, you know, dry up, and they complain to him.
Mm-hmm.
Moses complains to God. He says, you know, is this why you brought me out here?
Yeah.
Why don't you just kill me now, God? You know, he literally says that, right?
Yeah.
And there's a great book called Born to Kvetch. And that story is related by this author as the first recorded kvetch in history. Mm-hmm. You know, you brought us out here to die. And so there's that sense that as we get older, we realize that our relationship with God is much richer, that it's a friendship. Maybe when we're younger, we think of God the Father, right, as this strong judge-like figure. And then also there's this notion of agency. And so one of my favorite stories in the book is Naomi. Now, people know Naomi, but they don't know that they know Naomi, because literally the book in the Bible is called the Book of Ruth. But the star of the Book of Ruth is not Ruth. The star of the Book of Ruth is her mother-in-law, Naomi, who is so elderly that when her friends see her and they say, hey, Naomi, she says, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara. And Mara in Hebrew means bitterness. And she tells Ruth, leave me, go away. So Ruth is a widow, Naomi is a widow, and Naomi says, I'm nothing but trouble for you. And Ruth says, you know, famously, you may know this line, well, no, I'm going to stay with you, and wherever you go, I'll go. So this is a very close relationship. Now, Naomi notices that there's a character named Obed, and he's kind of got the eye for Ruth. And Naomi goes into Yenta the matchmaker mode, right? Mm-hmm. And says, you know, show your interest, but don't be too forward about it. And, of course, Ruth and Obed fall in love. Ruth and Boaz. I made an error. It's Ruth and Boaz who fall in love, and they have a son named Obed. And Obed is the father of Jesse, and Jesse is the father of David. So Naomi plays an incredibly important role in the history of salvation, and no one knows her name. Everyone is so happy when Ruth and Boaz have a child that Naomi's friends don't say, oh, Ruth had a son. They say, Naomi had a son. And so I think Naomi stands for that patient grandparent who knows it's going to work out and tells people it's going to work out and gives advice even if it's not accepted. So I think that's another gift of old age.
We're talking to Dr. Christopher Bellito, the author of Ageless Wisdom, Lifetime Lessons from the Bible, published by Paulus Press in 2016, available from Paulus on their website or imagine from Amazon.com.
All those places.
Or call Chris Bellito directly on his, his line, which I don't remember right now, but we will be glad to furnish you with further information on this great book. I'm Jerry Christensen. You're listening to the Seminary Explorers, and we're trying to find out what we might learn about wisdom, even though it is ageless. I'm a little off the subject, but you know, one of the wisest people in the New Testament is Jesus, and Jesus is, according to Luke, is something like 12 years old when he's seen to be wise among the wise in the temple. And I liked your insight that the key to wisdom in the Bible starts with humility, to recognize that we're not wise in a sense, or that we can listen to one another. There's the other thought that one has to have patience and humor.
Right.
And
right.
Your example there, among others, was Simeon and Anna from the Book of Luke.
Right. Before we get to them, of course, Sarah, right? So Sarah's 90 years old.
Yeah,
and we've got these great old ages in the Bible.
Yeah.
In fact, at one point, I was going to call this book Life Begins at 140. And we have to play with that. And I do that.
Methuselah at 900.
I kind of talk about what that means, what that may mean metaphorically in the early part of the book. But Sarah is traditionally 90 when she finds out that she's going to have a child, and she laughs. And in fact, that's what the name Isaac means. Isaac means laughter. It comes from the Hebrew root for laughter. And so I have often found the elderly in my life laughing when I'm crying because they've seen it all and they have a much greater perspective. And we tend to think of old age as a blessing. Of course, blessings and burdens often go together. Sometimes a burden, when we think it's a burden, turns out to be a blessing in the long run. But there's these two great characters of waiting, and they are Simeon and Anna. So to set the scene, it's a story that's recounted only in Luke. And Luke is trying to be very clear in making the connections about the Jewishness, to use that phrase, of Jesus and Mary and Joseph, and that Jesus is the Messiah that the Jews were waiting for. You know, not a political figure, not a social and economic leader, but this Prince of Peace. And so 40 days after Jesus is born, traditionally on December 25th, 40 days later is February 2nd. The reason that's important is because of Mary. Because ritually, according to the book of Leviticus, when a woman gives birth to a boy, she is impure for 7 days plus 33. So we think of our Jewish sisters, some of whom have the ritual bath in a mikvah. This is something like that. And so at the end of that, Mary and Joseph bring the baby Jesus, who's not even 7 weeks old at this point. He's 40 days old. And they bring him to consecrate him to God's service. They're presenting the child to Yahweh. They give a sacrifice of a pair of turtle doves or young pigeons. Mary is ritually made pure again. And Simeon, who is an old man of great years who's been waiting, he's waiting. He really wants to die, but God told him that he wouldn't die until he saw the Messiah. And the second he sees that baby, he knows that this is the Messiah. And I just imagine this scene when you place a newborn child. I'm thinking of when I placed my newborn child, less than 24 hours old, in the hands of my mother and father, and that moment where that connection, that generational connection is made. And Simeon, now that he knows he's seen the Messiah, looks up to heaven and he says, "That's it, God, take me, I'm ready." Yeah. The famous Nunc Dimittis, "Now you may dismiss your servant." Mm-hmm. And Anna, who's a woman who's identified as a prophetess, a woman of great faith who spends all of her time in the temple. And I think of our elderly brothers and sisters who now have the luxury. They can go to daily Mass if they want to, because they couldn't before because they're running off, you know, to church, or they are in these retirement centers. They're doing work with daycare centers, which is a great meeting of generations. Well, Anna is one of these people, and she hears Simeon, and she comes rushing over, and she just kind of, you know, we imagine she gives this huge bear hug to these two. And Simeon and Anna begin to, Anna is so excited, she tells everybody else that I've met the Messiah. Now, these are two old people, right, in a world that has no use for old people. What is a postmenopausal woman, right, worth, actually, you know, literally, legally, not worth a great deal. And yet, they are telling the young people, and this is what Pope Francis preached on the Feast of the Presentation in 2014, they're the prophets. I mean, can you imagine Joseph and Mary? They know that their son is pretty special, but now they've had two really important people say that. And now those two very important people, senior citizens, are some of the first people on the planet to proclaim that the Messiah has arrived and that the kingdom of God is at hand.
If you were to suggest to people after they read your book or looking at their book what they should do next, one thing might be go right to the Bible. And how would you suggest they approach the Bible? The same way you did?
Well, looking I would say stories? The first thing you want to do after you read this book, and if you like it, is buy another one for somebody else. But yeah, go back to the Bible. Look at the stories that intrigue you. Go back to familiar stories. And that's one of the things I try to do in the Bible. And then see if you can find some unfamiliar stories. And I do have some unfamiliar stories in there, Naomi being Exhibit A. Stories that you think you know about, and to kind of pray over them and see how you can bring your generations together into really one generation of faith. Different generations of age can be one generation of faith. And I think that is one of the big lessons of the Bible, that the family really needs to be a family in the broadest sense. I grew up in my grandmother's house with my parents, and she was part of my life. You know, the nuclear family is an anomaly in the history of the world. And so, you know, people say, oh, people graduate college, they don't get a job, they move back home. Well, that's
we're
nothing
the
new. We're the exception,
right?
Exactly.
What personal lessons did you learn? We've heard some already. Let's gather some together. Age is not wisdom is not necessarily associated with age.
That's right. Right.
Wisdom includes both burdens and blessings. Mm-hmm. Wisdom includes patience and laughter. Reaping and sowing. How about playing it forward, moving forward? That was one of your themes we haven't touched on.
Yeah. Well, I think that. What I would love to see are people who are retired going, you know, going back and mentoring. There's something called the Mentor Project that a woman named Deborah Heiser, H-E-I-S-E-R, has been working on, and she talks about generativity at the end of your life, that if you really want to get a lot of life at the end of your earthly years, one of the things you do is you give it all away. You generate life for yourself as your physical life is draining, but you're also generating life for the next generation by giving away all, if you're a lawyer, right, giving away all your tricks, all your you know, litigation performance techniques. If you're a teacher, if you're a butcher, a baker, or a candlestick maker. And so I think that that notion is that you don't, that life is not running out, it's just going on to another chapter, and that you live on by giving your life, you know, back to the next generation. What that really is doing is it's paying it forward, so that you're looking at the end of your life not as sunset but as sunrise, which is of course very familiar to a Christian audience, a Muslim and a Jewish audience as well, that life on earth is just one part of the story.
Ageless Wisdom is the name of the book. Ageless Wisdom, Lifetime Lessons from the Bible. The author is our guest today, Christopher M. Bellito, who is a professor of history at Kane University in New Jersey. And he is the author of several books, most recently Ageless Wisdom, which is available from Paulus Press or on Amazon.com. For the Seminary Explorers, I'm Jerry Christensen. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from Historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.